So there we go. The teacher is out of the class. And they say, carry on working. And you don't know when they're going to come back. What do you do? In my class, there was always one kid who jumped on the table. There was always another kid who tried to go up to the whiteboard and try and write something in small writing that the teacher wouldn't see. Others of us would talk to each other and have a gas. And there was always a diligent few who were swats. There's a dilemma. How do you live when the teacher's not there or the boss says to the office, I am out all afternoon and I might come back later. You know they're not coming back later. Does work productivity drop off the cliff? There's a dilemma. How do you work when the boss isn't there? A friend of mine, 15 years ago, in central London, he had the most unbelievable living arrangement. So he lived in the basement of this stunning townhouse. It was a five-minute walk from Tottenham Court Road, which is right in the center of London. It was one of those streets you would thought that was never in London. Tree-lined, absolutely beautiful. It was owned by the bloke who wrote the screenplay for the film Gladiator, not the program Gladiators, that's very different, but the film Gladiator. And he got to live there for free. But there were two conditions. One condition was he had to clean the house once a week. And the second thing was this. He was never allowed to use the rest of the house. And if the owner came back and found him doing that, he'd be kicked out. He never knew when the owner was going to return. Now, that he had an awesome gig there. That was amazing. But he had a dilemma. How was he going to use the house when the owner wasn't there? See, Jesus in today's passage is asking us a very similar question. It is a dilemma we face in lots of ordinary life, but he says this is the issue that we face with the biggest questions of life. We're living in Jesus' world, and he's coming back. We don't know when. When he does come back, what is he going to find you doing? Is he going to be pleased with how you're living? If you've been here the past couple of weeks, you know we've started this new series thinking about end times, having an eternal perspective. And Jesus in Matthew 24 and 25 is answering a couple of different questions with regards to the future. One to do with the destruction of Jerusalem, which he answered in the first week. But the second one is to do with his return. And when specifically is he going to come back? And we heard last week, just have a look at verse 36 of chapter 24. He said this, but about the day or hour no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. You see, we are told the date of his return is certain. God the Father knows it, but it's unannounced. So we will not know the date or time before it happens. So when he comes, it will be a complete shock. And the question for us is, how do you live in the gap? Now, if you were here last week, there were two things we were told to do. Verse 42, have a look at that. Therefore, keep watch. And verse 44, so you also must be ready. And the question is, what does it look like to be ready? Jesus tells four parables, each of us telling us how what life should look like in the gap. And we're in the second of the four parables today. And at the start of it, we're asked a question. Have a look at verse 45. This is the question we are asked. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them the food at the proper time? In other words, he He says the master's given the servant a job to do. And what does it look like to be wise and faithful with that job for when he returns? And he says there are two options. One is a really good option, and one is a really wicked option. Let's read the story again. Have a look at verse 46, and let's read it through. It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour he is not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be only weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, imagine, here's the story. There's a business and it's going really well. And the boss says to the guys in his organization, I'm going away for a while, maybe a bit of a sabbatical. And I'm definitely coming back, but I'm not going to tell you when. I'll be pretty sure. But one of you guys, I'm going to give you a job. And your job is a really important job to me because I really value the staff. You are going to do the lunchtime sandwich run. Now, this is a great boss because he actually, the company's going well, so he actually buys all his workers lunch every day at a posh sandwich shop. And they put in their order and the guy, you know, one of them goes off and he gets it and he says to one of them, while I'm away, I want you to be in charge of the sandwich run. And I'm going to give you the money, I'm going to give you the credit card, and you go and do that role. And so he heads off. And the person's in charge of that role, and he does it faithfully for a week. And then he looks in the bank balance and realizes there is a lot of money there. And he thinks to himself, the boss is not coming back for a very long time. I think my colleagues could cope with a Greg sausage roll. And so he tells them next week, new rules, guys. I'm sorry, it's not the sandwiches, it's the sausage rolls. The sausage rolls all the time, thinking to himself, I'm going to go out for a slap bang lunch. And he does it. He does it for a week. And then he looks again and he thinks, I'm not going to. I've had enough of feeding these ladies about it. They're going to complain about it. I'm going to be mean to them. I'm not going to feed them at all. And he says, look, the lunches are off now. Lunches are off. And every lunchtime, they're all bringing their sandwiches in. Well, he heads off for a long liquid lunch with his mates. And he drinks far too much and he rocks back in and it's all on the boss's expenses and he just thinks, I'm having the time of my life. What a stupid master. Until one day he's done his usual pattern. He's gone off for lunch with his boozy mates. He comes in at 2:30 and to his horror finds the boss is back. And he looks him in the eyes and says, here's your P45. Here's security guard. Clear your desk now. Get out of this building. You will pay back everything. I can't believe I trusted you. What does it look like to be a wise and faithful servant? When the cat's away, should the mice play? See, if you call yourself a Christian here today, this parable is for you. The scenario is one of a master with his servants. Again, just look at verse 45. It's really important. Who's the master? It's the Lord Jesus. Who are his servants? They are his people. He is called, verse 45, one of the servants to have a specific role that looks like serving the others. Have a look at verse 45 again. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in the household? No, it is his household. These are his people. to give them food at the proper time. You see, this is a parable aimed at believers. It is told to the disciples. It has implications for all of us, but in particular, those of us who are in spiritual leadership. Maybe you're an elder or a young church teacher, which is unfortunate because you're out teaching young church, or a connect group leader or a deacon, or you have some role that involves responsibility of serving and caring for others. And this is a warning to us. Spurgeon puts it like this. This is a warning not to the outside world. Spurgeon was a pastor from a couple of centuries ago. But to you who are inside the nominal church, who profess to be servants of God a couple of hundred years ago, who profess to be servants of God, and it's especially a warning to those of us who are ministers of the gospel. Let me read that again. This is a warning not to the outside world, but to you inside the nominal church. So maybe profess to be a Christian this morning. This is a warning to us. It's a warning to us. Will what I am doing be described as faithful and wise service when he returns? See, there'll be a good day for some, an utterly catastrophic day for others. And I kind of want to say, look, there is massive encouragement here. There's a huge encouragement here in verses 46 and 47 to do what he has given us to do. 36, okay, I've got the verses wrong up there, haven't I? I'm all over the shop. There we go. It's not 36 and 37, it is 46 and 47. Have a look at your verse again. Verse 46, it will be a good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. Truly, I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. See, for the servant who is doing what he's meant to do on that day when Jesus returns, it will be a great day. Now, let's be clear. He is not saying here your service of God is what gets you into heaven. That is not what he is saying. He's not going to come back and say, have you been doing enough good things to get you into my eternal kingdom? That is not what he is saying. Have you earned enough brownie points? That is never the case. You see, we don't serve to be accepted. We serve because we've already been accepted. You know, if you've trusted in Jesus for your forgiveness of sins, you've repented and believed in him, there is no fear of eternal condemnation for that day. But he does care how you've been serving him. There is accountability. There are rewards. Now we're going to dig into that in more detail in 2 weeks' time. But he's really clear, isn't it? It is a good day, verse 46, for the servant. Verse 47, truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. Do you want that day to be a good day? When he returns? Well, this is the question I've been asking myself. You know, am I going to be just as faithful serving Jesus in his absence as I would be in his presence? In other words, this is the question that's been getting under my skin this week. Would my service of Jesus look any different right now if he was here? Think about that. Just have a think. Would your service of Jesus look any different right now if he was here? It's a good question, isn't it? I found it a brutal question this week. Now, let me put some caveats on that. What does service of Jesus look like when he is there? It is not being crazy busy doing so many things for him that you burn out. You just got to look at Matthew's gospel. And when Jesus is there with his disciples, they take time out from the crowds. They go and have quiet moments together. They eat together. They laugh together. They pray together. You know, it doesn't mean I'm just so mad that I'm burnt out in 2 months' time. But I think it is asking us, are you getting on with what he has called you to do? Now, what has he called us to do? End of Matthew's gospel. Just keep your finger in there. Go to Matthew chapter 28. Matthew chapter 28. Okay, and this is what Jesus has left us to do. Matthew chapter 28, famous verses. Verse 18 of Matthew chapter 28, a few pages on. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations." Okay? Risen Lord Jesus ascending to heaven. Before he goes, he tells us what we're meant to be doing. Go and make disciples of all the nations. Go and see people want to know Christ and then see them matured in their relationship with Christ. That is the job he has left his church to do. But within that bigger picture, we all have a role to play. And so what is the role that God has got for you to do in serving his kingdom right now? I remember leading a Bible study with a friend in London, and this girl who was leading with me, she used to say, it was brilliant, she'd say, God has given us serious responsibility here. We have to keep praying for our group members. We have to keep praying for our group members. You know, if Jesus returned then, would he have found me doing the job I was called to do? Or maybe you're involved in enabling the church to run so that the word can be preached and so activities can happen here. You know, maybe your job is making sure the Bibles are on the chairs, or maybe you help in the sound desk, or maybe you've got the job of washing up the communion. What a fiddly job. All those little cups. After the service, you know, would Jesus find you doing that job joyfully, thankfully, or a bit grumpily because you're thinking no one's appreciating this? See, God's given us different things to do, but that looks like different things at different seasons of life as well. You know, it changes. There was a point I used to run a teenage summer camp and I absolutely loved it. And stepping back from the leadership of that was really painful. But it was the right thing to do because I was handing it on to someone else. Now, I could have left around moping going, well, I wanted to do that, Lord. But actually, the question for me was thinking, well, what have you got for me to do now, Lord? That was a season. What is the opportunity now in this season of life? You know, whether you are single at the moment or married or you've got little children or you've got grown-up children or you are male or you're female or you're divorced or you're a widower, whether you've got big responsibilities at work or maybe you're recently retired or maybe you're long-term retired or maybe you've got big responsibilities with in the family, your parents, your elderly parents, or a sick sibling, or in your season, with what you've got on your plate, what does serving him right now look like? Yeah, I remember when I was in Worcester, there was a pastor who used to minister a church up the road in Birmingham. He was a chap called Colin Templeman. He was a wonderful, joyful, godly, gospel man. He was the pastor of this church, and he had to step back from pastoring his church to look after his wife, who had been diagnosed with degenerative illness. And I remember him being at a minister's conference, and they just interviewed him about that. I'll never forget what he said. He said this, "I've been called to a higher service." See, he was doing the work that God had called him to do. At that specific point, it was a lot less visible. It was a lot less obvious. But for Jesus, it was no less valuable. What's God asked you to do today? Not 10 years ago, back in the good old days. We all want to go back to the good old days. What's he giving you to do today? And if he was here right now, would your service in that area look any different? Would it be a good day if he was going to come back today? Now look, there's a challenge there, isn't there? There's a challenge there that we maybe need to take away and think and pray about. But I do not think verses 46 and 47 are there to batter us. Just turn back to chapter 24. They are not there to batter us, but they are there and beat us up. They are there to encourage us, actually. And I think the encouragement of this is this, that he cares what you are doing. He knows how you're serving him. And verse 47, truly I tell you, he will put him in charge of all of his possessions. You know, there is reward. Grace asked me the killer question, my wife Grace, not God's Grace. My wife Grace asked me the killer question last night. Did you notice? Whenever she asks that question, I know there's something I should have noticed. I should have noticed. And I was like, was it the bathrooms clean? No, it was the fridge. She'd cleaned the fridge. What a disastrous husband I am that I rarely notice these things. You see, there's nothing more discouraging when you've worked really hard, when someone doesn't notice your hard work. But that is never a problem with Jesus. He sees it all. Great job. Great job as you cared for your wife as she was deteriorating with dementia. Great job as you persevered teaching those 8-year-olds who were quite frankly rotters. Great job as you slogged with those spreadsheets trying to work out the church's finances. Great job as you were a boss who actually lived out your Christian faith and was generous and fair and trustworthy. Look at what I've got for you now. Look what I've been able to trust you in this life, and look what you've got for the rest of eternity. Now, you're just thinking about verse 47. It's kind of a bit of a funny reward, isn't it? Okay, you've worked hard here. Here is a lot more work. Here are all the possessions to look after. Come on, Lord, I kind of wanted to sit on a hammock. Surely my reward is the hammock, isn't it? But actually, what we've got to understand, true greatness in God's kingdom is service. And in heaven, responsibility will be a glorious privilege. And it will be so wonderful because there'll be no sin to mess it up. Do you know, I'm sure there'll be saints there. Saints here who will meet in glory. In many ways, who have been plugging away in ways that are unnoticed and ways that people will not have paid much attention to, who when we'll get to eternity, we'll be like, wow, look at what the Lord's given you to do. That's awesome. Look at that. The King of Kings has trusted you to do this forever. And the great thing is, we won't be there going, well, why didn't I get that job? You know, didn't he see what I did? No, we'll be perfectly like Jesus. We'll be perfectly humble. It won't be a problem. We'll just be thankful for what they've got. You see, Jesus is coming back. And it's going to be a good day. It's going to be the best day if you're serving him and you know him. Now, I'm aware that maybe you are not a Christian here. And you're thinking, that kind of sounds great. It kind of sounds great that there is someone who cares about how I'm living and actually who's watching and is bothered about me and it has eternal consequences. And how do you know this is true? Well, look, we run a Christianity Explored course. Of course, you can come and ask all your questions and look for the evidence for who Jesus is and why he came. It happens on Tuesday nights. It's running now. There's still space if you want to come along to that Tuesday night. But look, there's the first point. Do what he has given you to do. But the second point, and much more quickly, is this. Don't use his absence to serve yourself. You see, there is a massive warning. It will not be a good day for all. See, the master really does care how we've been serving him. Verse 48, have a look at it. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time. And he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. You know, there is his internal dialogue. My master's staying away a long time. I've been given responsibility, but I don't believe there is any accountability. And so I'm going to do what I want. And he does the maths. He does the maths that I often do. I often do this calculation. When Grace is away for a few days, my wife, and I've got the kids, I often try and calculate, if she's coming back at 5 o'clock, how long have I got to leave all the washing up and blitz it? And blitz the house? How long have we got of being a pigsty so it is perfect when she comes back, but not before then? I'm going to leave it as late and as late as possible. Well, she has that, the person in the story, you know, they have that mindset. They are calculating, though, not so much what can I get away with. It's not even like, what is the bare minimum service? But he's doubting the boss is ever going to come back at all. And he's thinking, how can I use my power to serve myself? And actually, that looks like abuse of the people. And so he beats the people in his care. We don't know whether it's physical or mental or power games, but he sees it as a power trip. He's just been given the sandwich run. And yet he thinks it's a power trip. He's no different to them. They're all servants. He's just been given a different role. You know, the person who thinks the role or the position which is to organize or is above others, if they think that is about themselves, then the people suffer. But I think the glorious truth here, there is a warning there, but the glorious truth is that the master comes back and he does care. He cares for his people, verse 50. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect and an hour he is not aware, and he will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He will cut them to shreds. The language of weeping and gnashing of teeth, it is picture vivid language of utter loss. It is the Bible's language used to describe hell. Eternal, conscious punishment away from God's eternal, glorious kingdom. It is brutal. And it may sound a little bit harsh, but actually, this is how much he loves his people, and his righteous anger burns against sin, and he will not ultimately let people who unrepentantly abuse their position of authority to get away with it. This past couple of weeks, there's been a program on the BBC called Expose the Church's Darkest Secret. I don't know if you saw any of it. But it was a documentary about a bishop called Peter Ball, who was a bishop in Gloucester and other places, and he used his position of authority to sexually abuse minors. And it is utterly devastating. It's partly devastating because of the blind eye that was turned, and it was devastating because he died really before justice was able to be dealt with. But here Jesus says, justice will be dealt with. The people in his master's house will matter to him. And so that's got to encourage us. The false teachers, the people who abuse their positions, will ultimately not get away with it. There will be ultimate accountability. There will be ultimate justice. And there is a real warning. There is an eternal consequence to how you treat Jesus' people. Now look, I'm aware that some people here will have a really sensitive conscience about this. And be thinking, is this me? I did once bake a cake for fellowship lunch and I really couldn't be bothered and it wasn't very nice. Was I abusing God's people? Look, if you've got a sensitive conscience about this is not you. Probably it would not be you. See, the language in verse 51, where are they being assigned a place with? With the hypocrites. Who are the hypocrites? Turn back to chapter 23. Turn back to chapter 23. Here is Jesus declaring judgment on the religious leaders of the day, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law. He decries seven declarations of judgment, seven woes, and just listen to them. Verse 27, we're just going to read one of them. Woe to you, chapter 23, verse 27. Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites. There's the word. You are like whitewashed tombs which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In that same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you are full of hypocrisy and wickedness. See, these are people who are in amongst. They are religious looking, but they are not saved. They look like they are serving God, but they are actually serving themselves. And in verse chapter 24, this condemnation is for them. You see, the way they treat Jesus' people is actually the way they treat Jesus and his forgiveness. And for people who trample over Jesus' forgiveness, there is no hope of heaven, only certainty of hell. And he's saying to his disciples and he's saying to his church, make sure this is not you. Make sure when you serve, it is not about you and your ego, but about Jesus and his people. See, Jesus is coming back. And it will be a good day for some. It will be a horrific day for others. And what should you do in the light of it? What does wise and faithful service look like in the now? Well, would Jesus, if he was here, would your service look any different? Three ways we can respond. Some of us here will be here saying, no, actually, I'm going. I feel like I really am serving Jesus wholeheartedly now. Praise God. Keep on going. Secondly, some of you say, yes, my service would look different if I was thinking like that. And maybe I have got bitter lazy and maybe I have forgotten eternity and work and life has just drowned out Jesus. Well, maybe you just need to think, okay, Lord, help me with one area. There's one area you've been putting on my heart this morning. How can you help me this week just to take a step forward with you in that? And I guess as well, there'll be others of us who will say, yeah, my life would look different, but that actually I am in verses 48 and 49. My behavior fits the fact that actually I'm nowhere with Jesus. And I'm not thinking about his return. And I'm not ready for that day. And actually, the stuff I'm doing now that has to change, I need to repent of. And maybe you need to talk to someone about that today and get it sorted.